So I got a tweet from a Wonder Woman fan named Blue Girl, linking me to an article by a woman named Bridget McCone, titled The Ironically Iconic Wonder Woman, on a site I can't identify because I don't want to put an explicit tag on these podcasts. We'll call it B-Flix. It doesn't stand for Beyonce. Although I can now connect this show to the Marvel Superheroes podcast via Beyonce's cameo in Doctor Strange. Anyway, the entire article is a hit piece. That's actually its stated intention. It's part of a themed week of unpopular opinions. And so I could just roll my eyes at this and move on, but I think I can milk a show out of debating this particular topic. Although right off the bat, McCone is at a disadvantage because she spells DC with periods. That's a city. If you're talking about comics, it's just DC, two letters together. I'm sorry for being pedantic and pointing that out, but that's a bigger pet peeve of mine as a comic book geek than when they don't put the hyphen in Spider-Man. Now, basically, Miss McCone is having issues with the increased visibility of Wonder Woman in the face of her feature film coming out next year, and most especially for her being appointed a UN honorary ambassador for the empowerment of women and girls. Given that Wonder Woman was rather pointedly not created by women, and has not benefited from very many women creators over the course of her long history. For instance, she throws some shade in her second paragraph. William Moulton Marston, who created the ironically iconic Wonder Woman, was an outspoken male feminist who seduced his own student, Olive Byrne, and used her as unpaid domestic labor while living off his feminist wife, Elizabeth Holloway Marston's wages. Though feminist cartoonist Lou Rogers had been identified as an inspiration for Wonder Woman's imagery, it was the male cartoonist Harry G. Peter that Marston selected to draw her adventures. Marston's disconnect between the theory and practice of female autonomy seems reflected in this comic strip's disconnect between his ideal woman of Paradise Island and the real world. It was left to Alice Marble to write a Wonder Woman of History feature that linked Wonder Woman to the historical achievements of women. It's kind of hard not to note the judgmental tone in McCone's paragraph there. Apparently, Olive Byrne didn't have enough agency to ward off the advances of William Moulton Marston, and Elizabeth Holloway Marston had no control over whether or not her husband mooched off of her. I suppose Miss McCone is a better feminist than either one of them and therefore can shade these two women in pursuit of taking down a long-dead man and his superheroine creation. So hey, keep it classy by reinforcing classic gender roles there. Next, McCone asserts that DC snubbed Elizabeth Holloway Marston when she wanted to take over the strip after her husband died. That assumes that there's some sort of line of succession related to writers and comics that has never been in evidence at any point in history, but it also makes the overture that DC was being dismissive of a woman. In all likelihood, that's 100% true, but at the same time, I think she's reading a little too much into DC's motivations. DC has a long history of screwing over creators. There's a strong probability that DC never wanted Wonder Woman in the first place. Wonder Woman was created under the American Comics banner. Max Gaines was basically looking to curry favor with the pop psychologist, Moulton Marston. They collaborated, they came up with his character as a surprise success, and Marston retained rights over that character that were unprecedented in comics. The only other person that had even a fraction of that kind of control within the mainstream comic industry, especially with relation to DC, which at that time would have been National Periodical Publications, is Bob Kane. The only reason Kane had the rights he did was because he'd been solicited by Superman's creators, Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, to join in a lawsuit against National in their attempt to regain the rights to the Superman property. Bob Kane, being the sleaze that he was, instead pointed out to DC that A, he may have been underage when he signed his contract with National to create Batman. That wasn't in fact true, but he had doctored birth records that may have held up in court. And B, Bob Kane agreed to work with DC against Siegel and Shuster to prevent their claim from going through, proving that Bob Kane is an even bigger backstabber than DC Comics. But all things considered, Elizabeth Holloway Marston actually came out better than the vast majority of DC creators throughout their history, because Marston's estate continued to hold rights over Wonder Woman for decades, and those rights actually likely protected Wonder Woman since they included a provision that National, which eventually absorbed All American Comics and the contract that they probably did not wish to be beholden to, would have to continue to publish Wonder Woman comics to retain their rights to the character. That meant the Morrisons got some sort of financial compensation, and they had a better chance of reclaiming the character at some point in the future than any other DC creator really ever had. Off the top of my head, I think the only creator that ever had a book published with a DC Comics copyright who successfully got his character back was Pete Morrissey with Peter Cannon Thunderbolt, mainly because it could be argued that DC never had the rights to the character in the first place, because the people who sold the rights to DC didn't have them, since Pete Morrissey was supposed to have them in the first place, and DC basically cut a deal with Morrissey to continue publishing the character for a short period of time, despite their essentially having infringed on his copyright. Point being, DC Comics probably didn't want to give the Marston estate any more power or control over the character than they had to, and probably resented the fact that they were continuing to publish the character, but because that character continued to have value through licensing, through name recognition, and the lot, DC basically sucked it up and offered the Marstons the bare minimum that they had to by legal obligation. And so yes, Wonder Woman was handed over to Robert Kaniger, who was ultimately clearly no great friend to the feminists, and of many, many less than progressive stories were published under the Wonder Woman banner. But the fact that Wonder Woman continued to be published led to her getting a television show in the 1970s, and the success of that show did lead to the creation of other shows featuring female heroines like The Bionic Woman and Charlie's Angels, which is noted in McCone's article, but dismissively, because she's more interested in the point that these shows did not feature female creators behind the camera in production, even in hair and makeup. And again, this is a completely valid point, while at the same time being beside the point, which is that Wonder Woman in the 1940s showed that women could be strong superheroines just like the guys. She did the same thing in the 1970s for television, and the trail she blazed helped to prove that you could have a female protagonist in these heroic roles, and by extension, show impressionable young girls that they too could grow up to become heroes and not just have dreams of future domesticity or token roles outside of the home in society. Whatever feminist vacuum there may have been behind the camera, in front of it was what was important, to show the money men that there could be profit in women heroines, and also to show what could be gained if you put up a fight in the first place. It helps to be shown that something is possible in order to give people something to work towards. Also have to point out, too, that the show came into existence in large part because of the efforts of journalist and activist Gloria Steinem's promotion of the original Wonder Woman as a feminist icon, which is literally all that the article's writer says about Steinem's role. Now, Steinem, of course, is a recognized feminist. She is someone who's been on the front line of the feminist fight since the 1960s. She lived with Wonder Woman as a girl. She was inspired by the example of Wonder Woman, but because that doesn't fit with McCone's narrative, Steinem doesn't come up again in this article. And see, I take issue with this because McCone mentions other wartime feminine icons like Rosie the Riveter, praising her while damning Wonder Woman, failing to notice that a feminist inspired by this woman had gone on to fight for women's rights. And while that certainly isn't meant to diminish Rosie the Riveter, maybe don't diminish Wonder Woman at the same time. The author takes great exception to the Wonder Woman TV show, basically stating that all the women in the show that weren't Wonder Woman were idiots, and the Wonder Woman herself presented a very soft-pedaled version of feminism. And I'm not disputing what she's saying. Personally, I always thought that the show was pretty stupid. And so basically everybody on the show kind of comes off as a bit of an idiot, but I do think the women got it worse than anybody else. And I'm sure the feminism of the show comes off as very soft from a modern perspective, but it forgets how polarized the times were in the late 60s going into the 70s, how many warring factions there were within the United States, within the world. In fact, our current times is probably the closest America has come to that time period since the late 60s, early 70s. I've certainly not lived through times like that up until this point. And you may have noticed that in the popular culture, feminism is still something of a dirty word. There are a lot of people who are empowered feminists, objectively, who refuse to take on that mantle, who refuse to acknowledge the most basic and really universal tenets of feminism because it's been cast in such a bad light, most especially by conservative commentators. So if in 2016, strong women with their own money, with their own abilities, are concerned or off-put by feminism, can you imagine what that must have been like for women in the early 1970s? Do you really think that the majority of American women were going to respond to an Andrea Dworkin? Hell, even to a Gloria Steinem. However silly or flighty as Wonder Woman may come off from a modern lens, she was still pretty darned progressive for her times on television. She still led women who may not be willing to embrace the word feminism toward the ideals of feminism. And I reject this revisionist history trying to diminish the role of Wonder Woman as a cultural icon and moving women towards that point. And in fact, I think that's one of the reasons why so many people reject feminism in the modern context, because there are so many women who are self-proclaimed, and I'm sorry, not women, I shouldn't even say that. There are so many people who have decided they're going to be the arbiters of what good and bad feminism is. And if you don't do feminism the right way, you're a bad feminist. This article fairly reeks of that. I don't appreciate it. I do not have a problem with unpopular opinions. I'm the king of unpopular opinions. Ask anybody who knows me within the comic fan community. I'm perfectly willing to gut and gnaw on the entrails of any sacred cow you want to throw my way within the comics sphere. But I'm a little bit defensive when it comes to Wonder Woman because there's such a long history of pitting women against women. And while there are absolutely valid reasons to take umbrage with Wonder Woman's being appointed as an honorary ambassador, especially given the UN's tendency to not give women positions of power within its own organization, and then to appoint a character who could definitely be looked at as controversial in a role like that, rubbing it in the noses of women who actually work in the UN, who are trying to make progress. And that's an article I'd be willing to read, but that's not the article I'm reading now. Because the article isn't about building up real-world women or even other fictional women. So far, the article has been about placing Wonder Woman under a magnifying glass, like an ant on a sunny day. Here's a key paragraph to summarize that. Wonder Woman constantly struggles to balance their positive portrayal of Wonder Woman by viciously misogynistic portraits of all remaining women. The result implies that women have failed to achieve equality only because of their own deviousness or foolishness. Wonder Woman's heroism is also marked by unattainably extreme perfection, which Linda Carter admits in her commentary to being concerned by. People want to be her and they want to be able to identify. And if she's too perfect, all women who fail to meet Wonder Woman's punishing standards are reduced to the level of the catty and unlikable chorus of girls dismissed as a herd of sheep in the episode Miss G.I. Dream Girl. Wonder Woman is therefore the ultimate super Smurfette, the living embodiment of the Smurfette principles urged to isolate female achievement. The fact that a television show which encourages girls to feel mocking contempt for all of its female characters, apart from a literal Amazonian goddess, should be hailed as a feminist milestone is as ludicrous as it is tragic. Again, I'm not here to defend the show. It's cheesy, it's sexist, it's not very well written. Virtually everybody involved in the production is a man, and that male perspective is overriding. But it's also a product of its time. And that's a time that's 40 years gone. It's also a product of its genre. It's heroic fiction. If you look at Superman, Batman, Robin, nobody cares about any of the other characters that aren't wearing spandex. Those people only exist to prop up the narrative for our heroes. The heroes are supposed to be amazingly competent. They're supposed to be figures to aspire to. The viewer is meant to live vicariously through those characters. It's always been about power fantasy. And so if there aren't that many great women on the show called Wonder Woman, but Wonder Woman, as long as Wonder Woman is great on the show, as long as the viewer identification character is handled with respect, and through that vicarious adventure allows the person who's watching the show to embrace their own inner Amazon, their own Wonder Woman self, how is that not to the good? Now, if you want to find fault in Wonder Woman herself, sure. But let's be honest. The Wonder Woman concept basically was smuggled into comics. The medium has never wanted to treat Wonder Woman fair. They've always wanted to sexualize her. They've always wanted to use and abuse the character. And the fact that anything that can resemble a feminist icon was able to exist in 1940s comics, 1950s comics, early 1970s television, that's a testament to the character. Because against all odds, against all these other factors that should have torn Wonder Woman apart to leave her in the dust of time like so many other characters, Wonder Woman has stood strong. The Wonder Woman as a concept is strong enough to survive even all that adversity. The article's author spends a paragraph pointing out that the very few episodes of Wonder Woman that were written by women featured better realized characters than the ones not, to which I replied, duh. But again, what she perceives as, quote, revolutionary banalities of Wonder Woman probably meant a lot more to people in the 1970s lacking any sort of representation. It reminds me how a few years ago, people were really going after Tyler Perry and before that, the Wayans brothers, because they didn't like how these black creators in mostly black productions serving a black audience was representing black people. And yeah, some of that material may not have been the greatest. Some of that material might have been stereotypical, but it was a hell of a lot better than nothing at all. And just like in the 1970s, you had black people like the folks in Good Times and the Jeffersons who were being presented to more mixed audiences by a white creator, Norman Lear. Were they perfect? No. But were they great for their times? Did they represent for people that did not have representation up to that time? Hell yes. So attacking these older productions based on the standards of modern times, trying to portray them as not good enough, but you weren't there and you don't have the historical perspective of people who were there, so you don't know what it meant to people in the 1970s. And if you don't like it in 2016, great, don't watch it. And if you're hell-bent on taking it down, fine, but do you have to throw out the entire character and concept of the benefit with that dismissal of the television show? Which takes us to another paragraph. Wonder Woman is not only a super Smurfette, but she is the original fighting toy, FFT. The essence of the fighting toy is her superficial empowerment through kicking ass, while being deprived of deeper agency and continually serving as a sexual object for the male gaze. Nowhere is this tendency more clearly shown than with Linda Carter's Wonder Woman, Diana Prince, a character defined by her hypersexualization from bullet breasts to hot pants, yet rendered unthreatening to male viewers by her total absence of sexual agency. To which I rebut, again, you clearly didn't live through the 70s. Everything was hypersexualized in the 70s. We spent the entire 1980s and early 90s cleaning up the mess left over from how sexual the 70s were. And then the author compounds this lack of perspective by noting that they missed an opportunity to have LGBTQ representation within the Wonder Woman show. You know, this being a time when any homosexuality being mentioned in television was going to be coded. And also forgetting that guess who a substantial amount of the audience for the Wonder Woman show was? Gay people! It was a huge show with the gay community. It was also a huge show with women. This was not a show that was driven by the male gaze. Trust me, the 1970s had plenty of other eye candy for people if that's what they were looking for. Admittedly, Wonder Woman did have a costume that showed off a lot of skin, but in the time period, it was almost quaint, especially with her poofy bottoms. And she's dressing like what sexuality was in the 1940s and the 1970s. I'm not saying that these images didn't provide pleasure to certain people of a certain age, but generally speaking, Wonder Woman was fairly tame for its time, and it really doesn't take a lot to extrapolate that if you have an island full of women that have lived for thousands of years, and then all leave the island as soon as the first guy showed up, that there probably was a fair amount of lesbianism going on. Gay people of those times caught that. They didn't need to have it spoon-fed to them. They had brains of their own, and also they were living in times, again, where that sort of presentation couldn't be made openly, especially on television, especially for television that was presumably geared toward children. You still got your LGBTQ presentation. Those were different times. And yes, Steve Trevor made comments about his attraction to Wonder Woman, and Wonder Woman made comments about her attraction to Steve. That's what you did in the 70s. Everything wasn't so PC culture. And I'm not one of those guys either. I believe in PC culture. I think we need it. I think that one of the reasons why things have gotten so nasty in recent years in our culture is because there's one group of people that wants to stay stuck in a past time, still wants to make jokes about other races, about other sexualities, wants to dismiss it, wants to believe that that's not part of their American experience. And then the people who fall in those categories are just trying to live their lives. But also, those subcategories have their own prejudices that they have to deal with against one another. And then as a culture, we have this hovering presence of HR telling us what's appropriate to say, what's inappropriate to say. Everybody is so hypersensitive because we're all raw nerves at this point, because we're all angry about something or all upset about something. Or we've all tried to push for equality and come up short of that mark and are aware of it. Or is part of that push for equality, people who've had an excess of privilege have lost some of their rights to just say whatever comes out of their brain. And they're resentful for that. And they want to just be able to grab people by where they want to grab them and talk down to whoever they want to talk down to with impunity. And so we're all just so ticked off at each other that we want things the way we want them, and we want them that way now. And that is not a climate for diplomacy. And so besides being defensive of the character of Wonder Woman, a character that I have had a love for pretty much my entire life and have respected and have seen as a beneficial ideal in society, the same way I would view other major superheroes, despite the fact that when you break down the superhero concept itself is very problematic, it's potentially very fascistic, something I don't believe in. But that's the thing. If you bore down deep enough into anything, you're going to find flaw. Nothing is perfect. Nothing can exist under the white-hot intensity of someone else's perception of what these things should be. And so you have to weigh the pros and cons of these concepts' roles in our society, and you've got to keep perspective on the matter. So when I'm reading a 2,000-word essay on how much Wonder Woman sucks, I'm left wondering, is this part of the solution or is it part of the problem? And so far, with just a couple of paragraphs left in the article, I'm going with part of the problem. Speaking of those paragraphs, she goes back to the television producer Kramer, who makes clear not only that Wonder Woman's sexy appearance was integral to her role, but that the fighting toys ass-kicking would not be convincing. If they were wonderful actresses, they approached the job like a lady truck driver. By lady truck driver, he surely refers to the actress's ability to appear credibly violent, ruining their titillation by making their empowerment uncomfortably real. The Queen Hippolyta rants against the barbaric masculine behavior of men with comical lust. Yet Diana's own lust for Steve will remain demurely unvoiced, as she waits entirely passively for him to take the sexual initiative. This suggests that women's traditional presumed passive sexuality is natural and not socially enforced. If even a superpowered and invulnerable woman would never openly express her desires. Furthermore, Diana actively corrects Drusilla, Wonder Girl, when Drusilla comments on a man's attractiveness. That is, Diana has pointedly shown schooling a younger, sexually outspoken woman into proper passivity and self-suppression, which is enforced by the show as hallmarks of the good femininity that distinguishes Wonder Woman from blonde Nazi sluts. Linda Carter expresses regret over Wonder Woman's lack of sexual fulfillment in the DVD extras. She didn't have a love in her life, and she didn't have children. I would hope that story would be told. That's such a huge part of womanhood. To me, that's the strongest paragraph in the article. Those are all valid criticisms. There are criticisms I myself have launched at times. It would probably help if the author of the article didn't keep referring to people as sluts within the context of the article, because even with the equivocation that she's referring to the mentality that went into writing the sluts, she's still running around calling people sluts. And I'm also going to argue that it's not necessarily a safe assumption that violent action was seen as harmful to the titillation factor of Wonder Woman. I think that violent action would have been problematic on Superman and Batman shows as well. It really puts a cramp in the power fantasy when you actually show blood and violence and you make that a little too real. I think that's a problem we've been seeing with the recent DC movies. People aren't comfortable with seeing Batman blowing people away, Superman killing people with his heat vision. It misses the point that these characters are supposed to be idealized. They're not attainable. They're supposed to be much better than any of us. And they shouldn't have to resort to the kind of nasty, bloody violence that we as mere humans are prone to inflict on one another. McCone then goes on to criticizing both William Moulton Marston's and the television producer's tendency to fixate on feminine submission, and there's a particularly good line about how in male-authored feminism, it's suggested that women can empower themselves by being traditionally feminine harder. That's actually another solid paragraph. I can't dispute that. That's a genuine complaint. Which leads me to the final paragraph. Actual women's liberation, however, involved riots, incarceration, hunger strikes, strikes, occupation movements, clenched fists, and even, on occasion, an unattractive shrillness resembling that of a lady truck driver. Actual liberation involved the collective organization that the Super Smurfette pointedly avoids. Far from a step forward, Wonder Woman is worse than more simply offensive chauvinism because it insidiously exploits the female audience's desire to identify with Wonder Woman's empowerment. As Linda Carter puts it, there's something about the goddess within, that secret part that resides in every woman, that is a Wonder Woman, that yearns for that independence and strength. That secret part is harnessed by Wonder Woman to push female viewers into aspiring to a failed model of womanhood, one characterized by its hostility to other women, its punishing perfectionism, its sexual passivity, and its self-sacrificing submission. Our goddesses within deserve so much better. I'd argue that Wonder Woman presents a different vision of feminism. I've always found suspect the mentality that there's only one right way to do anything. But I also agree that Wonder Woman is not above reproach. I can absolutely see where the television show's specific approach to women, how they interact with one another, what would be idealized behavior amongst women, can be highly problematic. But at the same time, it seems to me that after taking a stronger historical perspective of the 1940s adventures early in the article, Bridget McCone seems to think that Wonder Woman has stopped evolving since the television show, that the television show is the be-all, end-all of who Wonder Woman is to the general audience, neglecting to notice that throughout the run of the Wonder Woman live-action television show, she was also the only DC hero to have such a show, while simultaneously appearing on the Super Friends cartoon every Saturday morning, where she was typically the lone female heroine, which, yes, I acknowledge supports the Super Smurfette notation, but she happened to be one of the best characters on that show. I personally say the best character on that show. And seeing as how she was standing amongst other icons, male icons, who embody the same sort of perfectionist notions that Bridget McCone takes exemptions of on the television show, I think within that context, you see that this Wonder Woman is standing alongside these other icons, that she is at least their equal, if not their better. She's the one giving Aquaman the ride in her invisible jet, and her invisible jet is way cooler than the stinking bat plane. And yes, she's the one heroine on this show, and there should be more, and I'm sure there should have been more women writers working on the Super Friends cartoon. But she was there, she was representing, she represented well. She was an inspirational figure to women before the television show. She's been an inspirational figure afterwards, which is probably one of the reasons why Blue Girl tweeted out a link to this article in the first place to people who did things like Wonder Woman podcasting, like me and Angela over on Wonder Woman Warrior for Peace. If Bridget McCone doesn't like Wonder Woman and sees her as potentially harmful, she's got to write 2,000 words about that. But the fact is, Wonder Woman is bigger than Bridget McCone. She's bigger than me. She's bigger than most of us. Linda Carter played Wonder Woman on a TV show. Most people will always remember Linda Carter as the actress that played Wonder Woman on that TV show. But I recognize Linda Carter didn't have the biggest of careers. So let's look at one of the bigger movie stars in the world. Look at Will Smith. People know Will Smith, they like him, they give him a lot of money for his movies, but nobody remembers Michael Lowry. I can't tell you whether he played J or K in the Men in Black movies. I'm certainly well aware of who Will Smith is, but in 50 years, probably people aren't going to know him as well as they know Wonder Woman. You look at some of the biggest female stars in the world, Marilyn Monroe, Audrey Hepburn. These are women that existed before Wonder Woman. Their fame came after, though. And in passing, they've had an immortality through the pop culture, through iconography, through their films and their works. But is Marilyn Monroe really that much better known than Wonder Woman? Of the three women, I would say Audrey Hepburn is the greatest role model in terms of what she actually did in her life. But one of her most notable works was in a movie where she co-starred with Mickey Rooney in Yellowface. So Audrey Hepburn has left herself open for similar criticism. And honestly, how much resonance will Marilyn Monroe and Audrey Hepburn have in another 50 years? I'm not going to try to put the heroism of Wonder Woman up against the heroism of Margaret Sanger, for instance, because then you're talking about a real woman hero who had a major positive impact on society, who played a major role in empowering women. But Margaret Sanger is long dead. Wonder Woman is still part of the popular culture. She's someone who's been inspiring women for decades, will likely continue to inspire women for decades. Part of the reason for that is because she is the property of a corporation that makes money off of putting her out there. She will always soft pedal a very agreeable form of feminism. Right now, they've got her running around with a sword and a shield because people are comfortable with women kicking butt, as was noted. They're not comfortable with them having opinions or running their country. We have to get people to that place. Ideally, the creators behind Wonder Woman will help us to get to that place. But even if they don't, I don't know that tearing down Wonder Woman builds anybody else up. If you want to torch Wonder Woman, what do you put in her place afterwards? And then I get to the byline. Bridget McCone's campy superheroine of choice remains Xena until further notice. Xena, who was created by a guy. and appeared on a show produced by guys, largely written and directed by guys, featuring a shtick that she stole from Red Sonja, who was also created by guys. Xena was more modern than Wonder Woman. She did have her allusions to bisexuality that I don't think were ever made completely overt, not unlike Wonder Woman. It is interesting, though, that one of my big complaints with Wonder Woman in recent years has been how much of Xena's shtick Wonder Woman has stolen. I wonder if that'd be disagreeable to a Xena fan. I wonder if Xena really isn't all that much different from Wonder Woman, and in fact, their more recent similarities could probably raise the ire of a Xena fan. I'm just spitballing here. I'm not insinuating anything. I'm just wondering aloud. We received social media love from 108th Sage, Alan Middleton, Ange, Bad Ombre Scott, Between the Pages, Bill Bear, Blue Girl, Changeling, Charlie Niemeyer, Cindy Womack, Coffee and Comics Blog, Comic Book Insurance, Comic Couplets, Comic Reflections, Craig Lane, Darren Rue Sutherland, David Golding, DCU Movie Page, Ed Moore and Ed Moore Jr. at Indie Comics Fan, at Marvel Bronze Age, at Teal Productions, and at Miskatonic, Eli, Inigo Montoya, The Fire and Water Podcast Network, Geekish Cast, Gerald Schopfer RN, I'm the Gun, Jeffrey Brown, Joseph Crawford, Justice's First Dawn, Keith G. Baker, Kirk Spencer, Luke Dobb, Mark Sweeney, Martin Gray, Matches Ballone, Min, Nethead, Nora Crest, Not Guano Man, Pinciero Negativo, Peter War, Pietro Blacksmoth, PJ Frightful, Randy Caldwell, Richard Field, Ronnie Cassol, Silver and Gold Podcast, Slangwood Scott, Sonia Brown, Style Icon, Sin, Treasury Comics Podcast, Trucker Talk, Warlock Thanos Podcast, Warlord Worlds, Wonder Woman Warrior for Peace, Willie Yarbrough, and the Xenozoic Xenophiles Podcast. Firestorm fan noted of 75 birthdays, the secret origins of Wonder Woman. All-star guests? Really? How is that so? I wasn't on the show. Fire and Water Network wanted to direct people toward their coverage of Wonder Woman's mayor agency on the Who's Who podcast from the 1989 annuals episode. Martin Gray tweeted, thanks, looking forward to hearing you on Wonder Woman 75. PJ Frightful noted, great episode with great thoughts from all involved, himself included. Ange tweeted, great review of Wonder Woman by Diablo Frank with great fans, and I'm there too. Episode 21 of the Trucker Talk podcast, The Train to Avalon Bay, featured promos for Us, Warrior for Peace, and Punch Like a Girl podcast. Darren and Ruth also sent kudos to Diablo Frank, great writing and editing. Further, they acknowledged that they were celebrating Wonder Woman 75 with me and sharing original artwork by George Perez. You can check that out on the blog. Wonder Woman is the copyright of DC Comics Entertainment. This is a non-profit fan-produced podcast. No infringement of any copyrights are intended, and where copyrighted material appears, it is believed protected under fair use. If you enjoy the show, please feel free to leave a comment on the Diana Prince is the New Wonder Woman blog, the Rolled Spine podcast blog, write to me at emailofdiablu@yahoo.com, featuring two underscores, or just hit me up on Twitter at CommanderBlanks or at Rolled Spine. Thank you for listening, and have a wonderful week. Thank you.